another edition of the Film Drunk Broadcast is here for you. We got a special edition this week. We have an In Frock Quarters guest, and it's not just one of Vince's comedian transients that he found at the comedy bus stop.
How dare you?
Well, it's true. Yeah. This is your...
They need a place to stay sometimes.
just for a couple hours to get out of the rain. It's so cold out there.
Just let him do a set in your bedroom.
this is your rapist, Ben. The whole crew is here. Of course, blogger, super blogger, Vince.
That's me.
We have a real Brett, not... Well, fake Brett maybe, but real Brett for sure.
Eh, we'll see.
Yeah, and human giant Brandon.
Ah, streep.
And then Connor Pritchard. Did I get that right?
That's it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Third in-studio guest ever.
Nice. No, it's more than that.
No. You count down.
Oh, yeah, well...
Do comedians count as
yeah,
a
Yeah, I forgot.
It was like three if you think it's 16-ish.
Well, that would be...
Okay, if you count comedians as half...
Fifth. We had Matt, we had Lindy, we had multiple comedians.
Multiple Matts.
We had Matt, Lindy, and Lindy.
No, we had Matt, Lindy, then multiple comedians of your friends.
Yeah, they're both named Matt.
One's the Museum of Comedy.
Right. Yeah. No. Anyway.
Anyway.
Five. Let's say that.
So that's not three, but carry on.
Hey, well.
Do you have a show or something you wanted to get to? With your counting?
Shut up.
Bullshit.
Oh, is that what we're doing here?
So, Connor, thanks for joining us. For those of you who don't know Connor Pritchard's name, he is one of the co-creators of Workaholics. Is that correct?
That's correct. Co-creator, executive producer.
So still involved?
Only financially. Checks in my mailbox.
Okay, well, that's not a bad way to be involved. Yeah. If you're gonna still be involved, that's probably the checking off the list. If that's the only way to be involved, that's probably number one, right?
It is, right? Yeah. So I worked on the first season and left to do my own projects.
Okay. And what sort of projects are those?
I just made an animated movie in Toronto, Wizard of Oz. It's Oz 3D. It's a 3D mid-sized budget animated film, Wizard of Oz remake, and the people that did Romeo and Juliet are doing it.
So CGI or hand-drawn?
CGI, yeah. And a bunch of other stuff. Just sold a high school script, writing books. Basically, after I left Workaholics, I'm kind of just using that to set up other businesses and projects. Yeah,
that's a nice line on the resume, isn't it?
It is, yeah. People will return my emails now.
Well, that's a crazy thing.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the show, but you're not involved in the creative process anymore after the first season. That was it?
Yeah, so, well, I set it up. I found these guys. So basically, I moved down to L.A. in 2004. And
it was 2005.
2005. Thank you, Brendan.
He doesn't keep track of space and time.
Connor and I were bouncers together, actually. Little known fact. Yes, we were bouncers at the same bar. So I recall.
Did you guys grow up as well, or you just happened to both be from the same area?
We knew each other in Moran. We were rivals on the football field.
Exactly.
But yeah, we knew each other from.
Were you defensive line and Brendan was offensive line?
And then we switched. We always played against each other.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a serious rivalry.
Yeah,
it is. He was much better than I was. So
what?
He is a retired NFL superstar.
Yeah, Niners practice squad, right?
Yeah, for a little
while. Don't sell it short. He was training camp.
I had my cup of coffee. You know?
NFL Europe,
and then they dumped it in my crotch.
NFL Europe potential,
and they refused to suck his jeans afterwards.
Brendan, we're gonna have to let you go. It turns out we poured too much coffee in your crotch, and. That's affecting your performance.
I couldn't help but notice, what with the scalded genitals and all.
So we'll see you around. Best of luck. Maybe again next year. We'll give it a shot.
Did you get one of those really nice speeches when they said you're no longer going to be a part of the team?
No, the coach just said, he goes, all right, listen, I'm going to level with you. From the ankles down and from the neck up, you're an NFL left tackle. The rest needs a lot of work. I'm not joking. He actually told me that.
You've got the navel of a ballerina. This is really not working out for you.
The coach on the team before that told me, I'm not saying you can't play in the NFL. I'm just saying you can't play here.
You could play somewhere, but definitely never here ever.
There's probably find a team that's less good than this one.
Yeah.
You probably fit right in there.
To be fair, I was backing up a future Hall of Famer, so... I mean, I sucked. Don't get it twisted. I was not very good. So.
Except for your feet and your head.
Except for my feet and my head. I was really good at using it to run into people.
Got really heavy feet.
You're a hometown hero now, though.
Thanks, buddy.
Immortalized.
Yeah.
Did you get your number retired?
No, I didn't.
Is there a statue of him? pushing
other men. Wins.
You guys should start lobbying my high school on my behalf. You know,
I feel like Detroit with RoboCop. It's Marin with Brendan.
Yeah.
I'd be down. I'd go to the unveiling of that statue.
I would too, but then like Connor might be there like Al Bundy trying to blow it up. Do you remember that that episode of the Married with Children? Probably my favorite one ever where they blow up the scoreboard.
No, I don't remember.
Was that the one where he tied himself to the goalpost for a long time?
He tied Bud to the goalpost and because he thought that his rival, who was like a year younger than him and who broke all of like he scored like five touchdowns in a game or whatever, they thought they were going to name the field after him and they unveil it and it's Al Bundy Field and then Bud blows it up anyway.
Do you remember every single episode or just that one? Because
no, that's just my favorite.
This is a fun trip down memory lane. Yeah. So you went down to L.A. in 2005 and or 6, depending on who you believe.
And I lived off of Chili and I think Miller Lite for a few years doing PA work. I worked on – the first job I had was on Beauty and the Geek. Mm-hmm. Do you guys know that show?
I do remember that show.
And
I think I watched the first season and then it went sort of down.
Wait. Okay, so this one – all right. So they had – a bunch of oh no wait was that hot like for okay so was this the one where they
reality
had a bunch
show.
Of geeks and like they were it was like a dating show where they were trying to win a hot chick and then halfway through the season they brought on like some hot guys to
yeah
or was that a different
I was one?
One
of the earlier seasons but
I think I'm thinking of a different
I was
show.
I was working for the second AD so I was in charge of wrangling the nerds and they wouldn't let them drink really they wouldn't let them do anything not on camera
really. Oh, not on camera.
They give him like a few glasses of champagne every once in a while. But one of the kids, I can't even remember his name now, he came to me and he's like, dude, we're in a house, in a mansion with all of these girls. Is there any way you can sneak off campus, is what they called it, and get us some alcohol? So I went and bought like two jugs of Smirnoff, took the labels off, put it in the fridge, and we left on a Saturday. And basically they just have the Pelco cameras all around the house where they can catch, you know, action. There's no camera crew there. And I came back on a Monday, and all hell had broken loose. Like, the kids had gotten shit-faced. Two of the girls had tried to have a threesome with one of the guys. The girl tried to block the camera with a stool and a sweater and fell down and cracked her ribs. And they ended up using a lot of the footage, but there was, like, a witch hunt to find out who brought them the alcohol.
But that's – I mean, isn't it usually, like – reality show standard practice to have a like feed them a lot of booze on purpose?
They did. This one was pretty controlled. I've worked on other reality shows. This one they really kind of.
This was 2005, my goodness.
All right, anyway, so Connor, we cut you off.
That's right.
I don't even know where we were, but I think you said you moved to LA.
No, you were a PA on Beauty and the Geek.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So did they discover that you were the one who got the booze?
No, there was a witch hunt, but they never found me. So
Did you disappear in a puff of smoke or
No, the nerd on the show never told on me. He was the only person that knew. So
yeah,
I kind of just
he knew even
kept
nerds
quiet.
Even nerds know snitches get stitches.
Yeah. He just knew that you played football in high school and they're like, this guy's gonna beat me up.
I've gotten enough swirlies and wedgies in my day to know that I'm not gonna talk about this one. So that show, Vince, just for your to jar your memory, is the one where they had the super nerdy guys and the super hot chicks, and they paired them up, and they had to do sorts of challenges. They lived in this house, and they had like they had challenges where the chicks had to do smart stuff, and the nerds had to do talk to girls.
Yes.
Was that the Ashton Kutcher one?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there was another one where like there was a bunch of nerds and they were trying to get with I think it was like just one hot chick or something. And then, like, halfway through the season, they brought on, like, some hot dudes. So it was like the chick had to choose between looks or personality or whatever. But then, of course, she chose, one of the hot guys. But then at some point, and there was, like, a whirlwind romance, and they were all telling each other they loved each other and everything. And then at some point, it came out that the chick had dated Fabio. And the hot dude that she had picked that they had been like on they were like practically proposing marriage. He found out she dated Fabio and he's like, well, fuck this, I'm out.
I've actually heard he's a really nice guy.
Fabio?
I'm sure
he is. But this guy was like, you fuck Fabio, I'm done. No way.
Fabio has entered you.
I'm not taking Fabio's leavings.
So basically, I worked a bunch of shitty PA jobs, and then
which includes Vince. Were you technically a PA on Real World, or are you an editor?
Well, I was an I started as a dailies editor as an intern. Like, I edited dailies as an intern, and then I became a PA, like, right as the show was ending. So basically, I was just, like, cleaning up the house.
Is a PA a step above a dailies editor? I thought that was...
Well, I was an, intern.
Yeah. It's like a sidestep.
So cleaning up the house, you were throwing away all the condoms and stuff?
Actually, they had
and the horrors, let's face it. They have a hard time waking up before noon.
Frankie's gimp masks.
Yeah. I did see Frankie with a ball gag on. They never showed that on the TV.
They didn't show that on the shit they should have shown?
Yeah, exactly. There was so much they should have shown.
Did you bring that from home, or did they have that just stocked in the cabinets? Is there like a supply closet in the real world house?
There was this PA that snuck it in. She's like, can you give me a ball gag? And they never found out who it was.
and like an industrial jug of creme de menthe. That's the only way I can get off.
No, there was a bunch of shitty jobs. I mean, because, you know, they decorate all the real world houses ridiculously, and this one had a balcony that was like a beach themed balcony that was all covered in sand. So like all the sand that they trucked in to create this beach balcony, I had to shovel off into garbage cans and take it away. That was one of the things.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
So that's, as a dailies editor, that's sort of the perk.
I was a PA in San Diego where there was very few high quality productions coming through. So my PA jobs were so unbelievably shitty. I remember there was a golf infomercial, and like, I'm sure this happens on a lot of production sets where they find out that they don't actually have a job for you. Like, they just have a certain budget for a certain number of PAs, and they realize like there's really nothing for you to do. So one of my jobs was they just had me stand next to the grip truck because instead of closing the grip truck and locking it up while they're out there on the course, they just left it open so it would save them the time to relock and unlock the grip truck. They just had me stand next to it so no one would steal any of the lights or equipment. So
and there was probably three of you doing that.
Yeah. Well, do you have any good PA stories of the kind of crap?
Let me try to think.
Besides plying them with lots of booze, of course, never getting caught.
I worked on a movie called What Love Is, which is like a little independent romantic comedy. And I think this was a few months into being down in LA, and I had to go get Gina Gershon's vegan meal, like, delivered. It was across the other side of LA. Like, we were in Burbank, and I had to go to like Westwood. And for anyone that knows that geography, it's very far, especially during rush hour. And my car was blocked in, so I ended up taking this like the producer's brand new Mercedes convertible. And it's just like one of those like out of body experiences you have. And you're like, I am driving on the 101 right now, sitting in traffic in a brand new Mercedes, going to pick up Gina Gershon's vegan food. You're like, what the fuck am I doing with my life?
She only eats vegan from this one particular restaurant. She needs it. She doesn't care if it's here in 5 hours. She just needs it.
She was gorgeous, though.
Even if your car wasn't blocked in, she'll only actually eat it out of her Mercedes convertible. So that's part of her rider.
She's a Mercedes vegan.
Yeah. She still looks pretty good, then?
She does, yeah. It was a few years ago, but she's very nice, too.
I remember like, at least that's Gina Gershon, like, you knew who it was. I was like on a Deepak Chopra seminar infomercial where like the DP demanded that I get him diet cherry caffeine free Dr. Pepper, which I don't even think exists. And I went to like one of those
half calf.
I went to those one of those gigantic Walmarts, and they didn't have it, you know, so I got like the closest thing, and of course just got reamed for it.
That really messes up his chakra.
It does.
It's like you never even went to truck standing school. Like, how did you even get in the industry? Fuck you.
So, Vince, what did you do on the set of this one show you worked on? Well, I stood by the truck for about 8 hours, made sure it didn't get nothing broke.
It's going on the resume. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was at one point.
So, what was the most fun show or the most memorable one that you worked on? Was Beauty and the Geek pretty fun?
Yeah, and then I got after PA jobs, I got a job reading scripts for National Lampoon's, and that's what made me really want to become a writer, because I just read so many bad scripts. Like, I remember
reading like Gold Diggers and Gold Diggers 2.
I remember reading one. It was about Midwest farm town, a retarded kid is best friends with a turkey. And, yeah, this gets better. Wait, just wait. Retarded kid is best friends with a turkey, and the dad goes to kill the turkey on Thanksgiving. The kid slides in front and gets his head chopped off. And then every Thanksgiving, he comes back to haunt his family, and the title the title was called Gobble Gobble.
That sounds pretty good.
I think that sounds like something Joe King may have penned.
Yeah, no, it was Meepers in it?
That was the kid.
Yeah. Is he a 30-year-old man with Down syndrome?
Oh.
Yeah. That was Meepers.
Yeah, so I just read so many bad scripts, and I think I was like 24 or 25. I was like, I can do better than this, and I started writing, you know, pretty much every day.
People discount the I can do better than that guy motivation, but I've said this before probably on the podcast, but I feel like every stand-up comic that I know at some point went and watched, like, I feel like anybody that goes to 3 open mics is like, no matter how much I suck, I'm going to be better than at least half of these people.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
There was a door, like the door guy at the last one of the open mic spots here in town. He was the door guy for one of our main open mics. And after about 4 of them, you know, now he's like one of the comics. Because after about 4 of them, he's like, you know, I know I'm better than at least half these people. And he is, actually.
I think any other reason for doing open mics is probably the wrong reason. Like, if you're not up there because you think you're better than half of those people, it's because you're doing, like, group therapy or That's whatever true. That shit is. And you should just stop right now. You're like, no, man, everyone should just win this together.
I need this.
My therapist said I should do more public speaking.
Yeah, just get fucked.
I saw that one of the first open mics I went to, this guy got up there and he's like, I'm not really a comic, I'm an actor, but I've been trying to get more comfortable in front of crowds. And then there was like dead air for about 15 seconds.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Have a good night.
And this was one of those open mics where everybody gets 3 minutes, which is like nothing. And he's
going great, pussy!
Yeah.
Nice work, man. How does that National Lampoon work? Is it more, sort of like a production house and people are sending you scripts, or are they scripts written in-house?
No, they would get an influx of scripts, but they've had a big regime change. They got in trouble. They were basically doing like insider trading.
On Gobble Gobble scripts?
On Gobble Gobble scripts, yeah. The guy who was running it was basically, because the National Lampoon's brand, if you put their name on it, they're guaranteed to make $5, $10 million in DVD sales. So he's having his buddy.
Like Girls Gone Wild, kind of.
He was having his buddies put in, you know, $1 million or $2 million to make these movies, stamping the name on it, and then releasing them. And it's a publicly traded company, so he got in big trouble.
Wow.
Yeah. So
who? I mean, nothing against National Lampoon, but who's like, oh, National Lampoon's? I'm buying this DVD.
You know, they're bad.
Probably the same as the Girls Gone Wild stuff. Like, who the fuck?
Well, no, because Girls Gone Wild. Yeah, that means there's bare tits in it at least.
Sure, but there's free porn on your computer.
Look, I don't know if you saw Van Wilder 17, but it was fucking life changing.
Or American Pie 7, Delta House, whatever the hell that shit's
Sorority
called.
Sorority Vacation twice.
Yeah.
Who does buy those?
National Lampoons?
Yeah.
Middle America.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're big fans, huh?
Yeah.
Big fans of National Lampoon's comedy.
I think someone else just bought them. I have no idea what they're doing now. But
so that led you to writing.
To writing, yeah. And then...
So did you start writing movies, TV stuff?
Everything. Spec scripts, feature, TV. And I think it was around the time when Outliers came out. And I got a huge kick in the ass from that book. Because I was like... I got to put in my 10,000 hours. So that year I wrote 12 feature scripts. It was kind of like my boot camp. And I had a job that allowed me a lot of time to do that. And wrote 12 scripts in a year. And then after that, I came out of that and I was ready to like show stuff to people. And then after that, I was like, I want to shoot some stuff to put online. And my buddy Dominic, that Brendan knows, we were doing live events, parties, theme parties and stuff.
A fellow bouncer?
Not a fellow bouncer, just a scumbag.
Yes. So in the industry, but not.
I mean, he's like a benevolent scumbag.
Yeah, he's a man whore. He lives on a boat now and just bangs cougars.
Oh, that's great. Anytime your address is in the water, just go down to Pier 8.
Yeah, if your address starts with slip pound sign blank.
Or if you just hang out by the docks, I'll come to you.
Make a hard left. Keep going down until you see the pirate flag.
Listen for the boat horn.
I mean, if you're going to be a scumbag, I think living on a boat is the most awesome. I mean, you were like alpha scumbag.
A nautical scumbag.
You were like a respectable scumbag.
Like one
at
step
that point.
From being an actual pirate.
These are international scumbag waters.
It's actually what I learned from him. It's illegal to live on boats. So there's this whole subculture where you have to like avoid the law, and there's actually law there that I come and check on you. So you have to hide perfect out.
But you have to get a maritime lawyer. Yeah,
exactly. That's perfect for the average scumbag out there, though.
International waters, bro. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, if you're gonna be a scumbag, the first thing you want to do is have your actual address be illegal. That's and on the water. I mean, that's a double whammy.
Oh, I'm gonna have to send this to him.
Not only do I live on the high seas, I'm an outlaw, baby. Yeah.
You want to come bang me and my cougar friends?
So you and Dominic were doing the live parties?
Yeah, well, basically we were down in LA, and it's a big sea of people trying to do stuff, so we wanted something to set us apart, and so we would do these theme parties and events. So we always had something to invite people to, and there were, you know, anywhere from 50 to 100 people, but anytime we met a producer or actor or comedian that we wanted to hang out with, we invited them to one of these parties that we had going, and we did like a Matthew McConaughey theme party, just weird, stupid stuff.
What does that even mean?
It was called the McConaughaven.
But what is... So
you had to dress up as one of his characters, and then we had a beer pong tournament and all that stuff. But so that's kind of how we started making a name for ourselves, and then we borrowed $7,000 from a family friend, and we were going to shoot these webisodes, so I started looking online for sketch comedy guys. And one thing I noticed about sketch comedy is that it was so fleeting. They were just kind of one-off, you know, funny things. And I wanted to make a TV pilot, chop it up into webisodes, and then try and pitch it. Basically build a fan base and pitch it. So that was our rationale behind Workaholics, which was originally called Fifth Year, which was our company name. So I clicked around, found these guys, Mail Order Comedy. They're the guys that are on Workaholics now. Found out two of them were from Concord up here in the Bay Area. Emailed them, met them for beers, got along great. We started doing comedy shows, promoting comedy shows with Adam Devine, the main guy on the show, and became really good friends.
Like comedy shows like sketch or like...
No, he was headlining these shows. And so we were doing midnight shows at the LA Improv, which is like the big comedy club there. And we would pack the house for these midnight shows. And it was just there was just a party. People would come shit-faced. It was fun. We'd get big names. Actually, one night, I think we had done about 5 or 6 of them. We're walking up to set up our signs and banners and stuff, and Dave Chappelle is outside of the comedy club, and the manager of the Improv comes out and goes, Dave Chappelle's in town for one night. He's coming back from the Philippines visiting his family. He wants to do your show. He heard it's fun. So we got to meet him for a while, talk to him. He was the nicest guy ever, and then he ended up getting on stage at 1:30 and going till 4:30 in the morning. So they closed the bar and started serving coffee, but it was amazing. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen him, but
yeah,
he's amazing.
I was just going to ask. Yeah, because he did a show, and you know, he does shows in San Francisco all the time. But I don't know if an email blast went out in the afternoon, but you know, he always sells out in like an hour.
Yeah.
And then he just sort of goes up with no material and just sort of...
Although it seems like that, because I've seen him several times, and he's awesome. But I saw him a couple times within about a year, and it's sort of, he's just so good at seeming like he has no material.
Well, yeah, I mean, something like he'll like sort of talk to the audience and he'll remember a bit, or I mean, it's not like he's totally unprepared, but I mean, he's been doing
it. It also sometimes spins off into more just talking to the crowd. Yeah. I mean, he's really an amazing performer. Like, he's just so good up there that it's pretty impressive.
Did you see his Inside the Actor's Studio? Like, it's interesting what he says. He's like, the most consistent thing in my life is a crowd. Since I've been 14, I've been up in front of a stage performing in front of a crowd. So that's my most comfortable state, is when I'm speaking to a crowd. So when you get up there or when you're listening to him, you feel like you're talking to a friend. And that's why he's really so good. Yeah.
Which is a double-edged sword, because people at Chappelle shows yell out the dumbest shit that I've ever fucking heard in my entire life.
It's
like
true.
They talk to him like he's sitting across from them at tea or something, and you're like, dude, the guy's on stage in front of 300 people. What are you doing?
But
right now?
People will do that, and then the crowd will sort of start to get angry and frustrated, and he's like, come on, man, I got this.
Like, yeah.
And then he'll just, you know, he'll do something that's 1,000 times funnier than whatever the person was just yelling at him. I mean, he's a true comedian. He really is amazing.
So,
up there.
When he was in San Francisco, he's like, oh, what do you guys want to talk about? And some weird old guy sitting next to me yells, Sesquicentennial of the Civil War.
So he did a break one time, did the same thing where he's just pausing for like for effect, and somebody yells out, do Yoda! He's like, what the fuck does that even mean?
So it was good times at the LA Improv.
LA Improv, yeah. And
speaking of which, this Saturday, if you guys want to come see me, Hollywood Improv.
No, I'm just gonna.
I'm just plugging. Sorry,
just plugging away.
Just go yeah. really
just not, wait, yeah, we're not gonna go to that.
We're almost sold out. So
really
close. Well, yeah, we're close.
Are you on the bill?
Yeah.
Yeah. Booyah.
I mean, I'm sure it's because of me and not Maria Bamford, but yeah, we're almost sold out.
You should probably take credit for that.
Yeah.
Are you really playing at the Improv?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm impressed.
Nice work, buddy. You made it. Adam Devine.
Thanks, yes. Brett.
Is which one?
Adam is Adam. They all
okay.
Have, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Adam Blake is Blake.
And
Honors. Yeah.
All right.
And then Kyle is Carl. Kyle is. There's right. four of them.
Yeah.
Kyle's the director, and Kyle's Carl, and he actually does have a lazy eye.
He's the drug dealer guy.
He's a drug dealer. Yeah.
All right.
And yeah, so we shot these webisodes, threw them up on Funny or Die. And YouTube, and then got. We were so proud of these webisodes because they were so good. And then they only got. I think when we got contacted from Comedy Central, there's only 237 hits.
Wow.
And one of those hits was the right person, and it kind of spiraled. So then we went up against.
To be fair, they were. I haven't seen all of them, but they're pretty funny.
Oh, the webisodes.
Yeah.
The original ones. Yeah. They're very good.
Yeah,
they're,
I haven't seen them. What was the webisodes?
It's almost. I mean, they're very similar.
So this is after you contacted the guys from, what was their sketch comedy?
Mail order comedy.
Mail order
so
comedy.
They had some. I've seen some from whatever site they still have.
Yeah.
And there was like some of the Wizard stuff.
Yeah.
Is there different ones besides that or just more?
No, there's, well, they made them, Comedy Central made us take them down. So I think you can actually still see them on Funny or Die.
Okay.
But there's original webisodes with those guys, the Workaholics guys, in the same same looking office.
Then maybe I even saw ones before you met up with them.
Okay. Exactly.
But I would think they're probably fairly similar.
Yeah, they were very funny, but they were sketch comedy guys, and they're very talented and funny, but they hadn't had someone come in and be like, here's a bigger world that you can be a part of. Here's like a world you can thrive in. So we put them in that, you know, office space environment, and it really worked.
Yeah, it's a really funny show.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still, since you're executive producer, are you still involved at all?
Yeah, so, I mean, I can read scripts and send notes if I want, but I'm working on a bunch of other projects. But they just picked up 20 episodes for season 3, which is good. And then in TV, as an executive producer, your rate goes up every season, so...
Booyah.
So what was the idea? I mean, what was the idea that you brought to them? You're like, this is what I want you guys to do.
Well, I saw all their sketch comedy group, their stuff, and they were very funny, but I wanted a show. I wanted something I could pitch as a show, yeah, not a sketch.
The sketches were a little just random,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, they're crazy, like any sketch comedy group. They're crazy and off the wall and
but
weird.
Yeah, there was nothing really tying them all together.
No. So we took this, it was basically a TV pilot, and then chopped them up into five-minute episodes. Put them up online, and then got sold through Comedy Central. And then
how did that process work?
There's a little bit of a... There were some issues with it, but basically, as soon as there's serious money at stake and you know a network wants something, it gets serious. I mean, it becomes a business at that point.
People start stabbing dicks at that point.
Yeah, dick stabbing everywhere.
corporate dick stabbing. Corporate. It's classy, right? Like,
yeah. The suits come exactly. in, yeah. and then suits, with their swords.
You got to file a
dick
form.
Stabbed by a man in a tie.
they slam their legal contracts. It's like 5,000 pages thick.
Well, yeah, and then so you have the guys that created it and the cast, and then everyone kind of backs out, and then you have this swarm of just middlemen, agents, managers, lawyers that just
proving their worth.
Yeah, exactly. Coming
in,
fighting.
I gotta push some papers because I make a lot of money, and without me pushing these papers, I wouldn't make much.
I gotta get my beak wet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So then all the
I don't know what you guys are fucking with, but my beak is not very wet.
All the dust settled, and then we went up against 10 pilots, I think, and we were the only non-celebrity pilot. So they gave us $50,000
just on Comedy Central.
Yeah, to go to series, right? Mm-hmm. So they gave us $50,000, and it was the most money any of us had ever shot anything with. We were going to do 2 episodes.
Yeah, and other
people were like, "Dude, what the fuck? Yeah, this barely pays for catering, bro."
I mean, so that doesn't seem like a huge amount of money to shoot 2 episodes on. I mean, even if you've got
we could have done it.
Yeah.
Should we put in a helicopter? In this one?
Dude, guys, I know a good explosives guy.
It's one shot from a crane of a helicopter.
Yeah. We're gonna need this really complicated helicopter shot. It's just of me walking down the street, but I think it would look really cool.
So you said you're competing against 10 other shows on Comedy Central to go to series.
To go to series.
So the process is there's the 10 of them. The Comedy Central execs or whoever watch the 10
exactly.
and pick out X amount to actually
yeah.
go.
Yeah. All right. And ours was a big deal because usually they order 6 episodes right off the bat, and they ordered 10 episodes for the first season. So, and there was a huge, what was crazy, was a huge regime change at Comedy Central. The president that had been there for years was leaving, and a new guy, Kent Alterman, stepped in. So we thought we were going to get canned, but then they ended up getting behind it.
So what were the other celebrity shows that you were competing against?
There was an Ice Cube show. There was, yeah.
He's not funny anymore or ever.
I just saw him in 21 Jump Street, and I was struck by how much funnier P. Diddy was in Get Him to the Greek than Ice Cube was. And 21 Jump Street is pretty funny, but Ice Cube is not really that funny. And so I think there might be like an inverse correlation between like rapping talent and the ability
acting talent
to do like a funny cameo.
Yeah, because even in Friday, which is probably the funniest movie he's ever been in, he was more of the straight guy to Chris Tucker's craziness and even the dad.
Yeah.
He's got like one thing that he plays where he's like, hey man, I'm Ice Cube and I'm going to talk really loud and be angry. And
well, even in those commercials with Coors Light, where the Coors Light freezes everything and he's just... Well, I'm just saying he's not.
It's not your fault.
I always just think about him in Anaconda going, there's snakes out there in this bin.
No, he's like, yo, so how big is this snake? I remember that. I was in the trailer.
But he looks like he's trying so hard.
Yeah.
I think the same goes for actors, too. The crazier they are, the better actor they are. Like,
sure.
You look at Tom Cruise.
I am that character. I've always been that character.
Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, yeah. Well, he's... borderline. I don't really know.
Oh, he's very for crazy. Sure nuts.
Yeah. He plays Nicolas
borderline
Cage.
Good
borderline
actor.
Personality
borderline good
disorder.
Actor or borderline crazy?
Borderline personality disorder.
Yeah, everything.
It's like Brandon Marshall.
I don't know if he's a good actor. I mean, he's been in very good films and very bad films.
He's not. Look,
I'm just saying I was genuinely driving angry.
He's got his he's got his wheelhouse, though. Like, he's so brilliant when he was H.I. McDonough in Raising Arizona, where he's just like, his hair's all fucked up. He's like, honey,
he's a ball of clay, man. If you get a director that knows how to mold Nick Cage is amazing.
But it's all you can shape is crazy. Yeah. It's a starfish.
Well, he's got
fucking a dog.
So much insane energy. Like if you get Werner Herzog
Bad
or the
Lieutenant.
Coen brothers, like he turns out really well.
Bad Lieutenant was amazing.
Or Adaptation.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Spirit's Still Dancing.
There's so many. Have you heard about The Raven, the John Cusack movie?
I've seen the trailer.
But so, all right. So the plot is that Edgar Allan Poe, John Cusack plays Edgar Allan Poe, and he's helping Scotland Yard solve catch a serial killer who's killing people based on the short stories of Edgar Allan Poe. Mm-hmm. Is that not the most like Donald Kaufman fucking script that you've ever heard? Like, that is the exact script that Donald Kaufman in Adaptation would have written.
Oh, the three?
Yeah, like mom said it was psychologically taught. Like, that is the exact script that guy would have written.
That's true.
Identity was another one that's a total
garbage.
Like, I think that was the actual plot.
Leave
of
John
the three.
Cusack alone, was, you son of a bitch.
I mean, that was literally the plot of the three.
It was.
Yeah,
like someone actually watched Adaptation. They're like, you know, that's actually a really fucking good idea.
Yeah, seriously.
That's sad that Kaufman's irony movie is still worth like $15 million.
Yeah, that shit plays in middle America.
My buddy and I, as a writing exercise, we heard a idea that Adam Carolla and John Favreau talked about on their radio show, and we actually wrote the treatment. And it was
it pedophile?
Yes. I have a treatment for that. Are you serious? You've heard that?
Yeah.
Ben's favorite.
Yeah. He has done that many times.
He's talked about it a few times.
There's pedophile and gay eye. Have you done gay eye yet?
No.
Do you know gay eye?
No.
Well, there's that one, and there's also the Olympics one. It was like Ring of Something where it's sort of like School Ties. But it's at an Olympic training facility, and every Olympic athlete has to do their personal best to do something to like help them out of the situation.
That's
like,
awesome.
Like the window is 35 feet, and I've only pole vaulted 34 feet. That's my best. Stuff like that. But pedophile is really good.
So, how much of a treatment, like a 20-page treatment.
Yeah. And did you get it to him?
No, I never sent it to anyone. I just did it for fun.
You gotta send it to him.
But actually, funny story, like as soon as you get a credit in Hollywood, you get picked up by a big agent and everything. And what they do is send you up kind of on a studio tour where you get to meet all the cool people. You go to Amblin Entertainment and Green Hat Films, like, and you get to, you go in there and you get to pitch your stuff. But I realized, my buddy Dominic and I, we realized about halfway through, it's, you're never going to sell anything. Like, you have,
you go and shake their hands because they're doing the agents a favor, and that's about it, right?
Exactly. I mean, they're just filling up their day with meetings. And like someone like Paramount or DreamWorks, they have 1,200 titles in development.
Good to meet you. That was fun. Yeah.
We so I get home. Oh, so, my day was so busy. So many meetings.
Oh my God, so many meetings.
So halfway through, we started bringing in fake pitches, and we got better responses with fake pitches than with our real scripts. We brought in one to a guy.
Don't tell me you resold Gobble Gobble, because
that is a treasure and you need to savor it as such.
That's my passion piece.
It's all right. No, you can tell us you wrote that. It's okay.
We brought in one called Spanformers, and it was about the it was about the Mexican Transformers. There was like the shitty vans and trucks that come to clean up after the real Transformers make a huge mess and blow up overpasses.
I feel like someone has stolen my Woptimus Prime idea, because I came up with Woptimus Prime a while ago.
It's a cabbage truck, right?
Yeah. Hey! Who stole all of my cabbage? What am I going to do?
That actually is pretty good. So they come in.
Mama, who took all of these Decepticons?
The Transformers destroy 18 freeways and all of downtown. Yeah. And the Spanformers, they have to come in and do like, God, I hate cleaning up all this shit all the time.
More than meets the eye.
God, Optimus Prime is such a dick.
Shouldn't you have gone with more than meets the eye? Aye, 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 aye.
These sons of bitches always make such a mess. I think you have something there.
That was the best response I got in a pitch room.
keep talking. Normally it's probably like, all right, good. They're half listening.
I can picture it. You got the guy like tenting his fingers, like.
great radio, Brendan. Great radio.
No, I'm describing he's tenting the fingers and nodding along.
That's sort of the Mr. Burns fingers.
Yeah. No one in Hollywood does any meeting without checking their iPhone the whole time and like occasionally glancing up at you from the right, where it's like, I'm playing a bird game here. It's got like birds and their physics and shit.
All right, let me put words in your mouth, but this is how I imagine it. I imagine when you're going in to pitch stuff, for the most part, like if you're pitching stuff you've already lost, it's more like if they think that they've discovered something, like that you're already 10 times more likely to have it become something than you like pitching something to someone.
Exactly. It's impossible to get development executives to like run something up the flagpole. So you really have to make them think like it's their idea. And that's half the reason I think Workaholics became a show, is because these two guys felt like they had found something. Mm-hmm. They had discovered it. And so they became like champions behind our project and like kept pushing it up the ranks and ranks until finally it was like the green light decision. So I've never sold something in a pitch room. I've pitched 150 projects, never sold something in a room. I mean, it has to be their idea.
You know, because an idea is one thing, but it could be the best idea. Like everything always comes down to execution, pretty much too.
Yeah,
there's not too many original ideas these days. You know, it's always going to come down to the execution.
Brendan, there's still a lot of board games that haven't been turned into movies, so leave those alone.
When are we going to get Chutes and Ladders?
I will say, Will Ferrell doing an entire film in Spanish is as close to a perfect pitch, I think, as you're going
to
get.
I'm excited to see that.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
Hope it's as good as Machete.
Is he doing Spanish poorly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Good.
Yo me amo Armando Alvarez. Yeah.
So pitching, you did all the rounds.
Yeah. And so basically it's really, really difficult to even pitch scripts. Like I don't even write scripts anymore. I'm writing books now, because like when you're pitching things, pitching 105 pages of paper is almost pointless, because
they also get so many.
They get so many, but the studios are really only making things that are risk aversive. Like that's why they're making Battleship. That's why they make Harry Potter, because it has a fan base or source material. And the only things that they're funding are the low budget Paranormal Activity horror movies, because
that do really well on their own. It's like, oh, look.
And that Ben loves. Let's do a full disclaimer here.
I like the Paranormal Activity movies, but even whether I like them or not.
I turned on the hot water, and cold water came out.
It's actually, that's really
scary. Ghosts!
That's really scary when that happens. It's probably never happened to you.
No, never. You know why? Yeah.
Because no ghosts have visited you.
Yeah, that's right. I don't live in an apartment without hot water.
No, I mean, it's similar to like...
Not anymore.
Oh, Vince moved out. That's what's going on. We're in his old place. That's still Ben's place.
It's still my place, but not Vince's anymore.
That's right.
There's no more 15-pound bags of tortilla chips. So sad.
Did you take that with you? How did you transport that? Did you get a guy to carry your bag of tortilla chips?
A Spanformer.
Do you want the true story?
It's like a UN food aid bag of tortilla chips.
You can make something up.
I'm
not going to check your
fucking references.
It
was intercepted by warlords during the move.
The true story is that I make my own tortilla chips now.
Yeah, and he does leave the oil for two to four months.
I reused it, to be fair.
to be fair, he didn't want to clean it.
Three drowned rats in there. Just, oh!
Yeah. It's easier. Better chips that way. Anyway.
So the show gets picked up. You beat out all sorts of celebrities, like mm-hmm. we discussed, Tom Cruise in Nick Cage, Ice Cube, and Master P.
Yep.
And then so the process from there, you go to actually writing the show.
This could be a new hot goss where we're like, which celebrity shows did you beat out?
They could say, Shaq, ha, ha, ha.
Bonnie Raitt and Jeremy Lin had a pilot about steel fishing.
That was Masterpiece pitch to Comedy Central. Make him say, ha, ha, ha. No limit laughter.
Fuck you.
Wouldn't
Brandon.
It just be make him say ha?
Yeah. Could be. Yeah.
You are fired.
Make him say ha. Ha 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 ha.
We're just spitballing.
Yeah. Sorry.
So this is a blue sky meeting. We agreed not to shoot each other down.
They said, all right, now you get to make 20, you said, right?
10. For the first season. And yeah. They hire a showrunner that runs the writing room, right? Or executive producer, and then you have to go through the interview process of that. You find that person, and then you basically hole up in a room with like 10 other writers and write the first season. Because the cast really wrote a lot of it. So they wanted the network allowed us to write the episodes first before we went into production. Sometimes mm-hmm. that's not the case. But
and then so is it a pretty scripted show, or is it semi...
Those guys are very good at improv. I mean, they're
It seems
really
like
funny.
Just watching it.
Yeah. My really like only job really on set for the first season was because they would improv so much. So I'd just stand off set with a binder and remind the guys what they had improvised about. So when we turned the cameras around for coverage, they could pick mm-hmm. up on the same joke.
So if two of the guys are from Concord and then mm-hmm. one of them's from Nebraska, how did they come together? How did they know each other?
How did they meet? I think they met. One of the guys went to community college. What's the one? Marymount Community College. Two of those guys. One of the guys from Concord went with Adam. They met and then came back up and started Mail Order Comedy in L.A.
So they were doing Mail Order Comedy in L.A. then? They weren't all like...
No, they were in L.A., yeah. All right. One of the guys and the director was actually a film editing teacher at L.A. Film School, Kyle. And so he directed and edited all of our webisodes, and he directed and edited the pilot.
Which one was the pilot? I've seen. Feel
the
like
pilot was the drug drug testing one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I really really liked the show, and
which is funny because we had to shoot it twice. We had to shoot one that was unaired, and then go back, you know, months later and shoot the exact same episode, almost the same script.
Because it wasn't the official for air. This was the for Comedy Central executive.
Yeah. We actually turned.
You spent $51,000.
Yeah, and so we turned in a budget that was pretty low because I don't know if you guys know about Always Sunny, but they were able to stay on air because their show was so cheap. So they got to like the second season. I think it was only like $400,000 or maybe even less than that
per episode. Which is crazy low. It sounds like a lot of money, but it's crazy low.
To be honest, I think that's the best way to do comedy because yeah. I mean. Like, I just saw Wanderlust, and, you know, I love David Wayne and all those guys, but you could tell, like, there's a departure point from when you're making the kind of shit like Always Sunny and Workaholics where you're making the comedy that you want to make, and then there's a departure point when you get to, like, a studio comedy, because when you do that, it's like they make you focus group it, and you can like if you know comedy at all, and you write comedy, you can just sense where the shit that they wrote leaves off and the part where they've sort of changed it a little bit for the broad audience. And like the more you spend, the more you end up having to do that. And then like the more you like Wanderlust wasn't that bad. I mean, it was a pretty good movie. There's still some really funny parts. But at a certain point, if you're playing to the focus group audience, like the actual product, it loses a personality to a certain degree because you can tell it's not the person that wrote it. It's not the creators deciding what to put in it. Like they're not entertaining themselves at a certain point. They're exactly, like trying to do it for other people.
The new president of Comedy Central, Kent Alterman, came in and his big MO was, I don't want to give any notes. I'll approve stuff in the scripts. I'll say, I think this is funny. I think this could change. But he didn't want to give any creative direction. So you have development executives kind of shaping the scripts a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone I've met that has ran their own shows or been in a writing room said, you guys got so lucky because they basically gave the cast and the showrunner full creative control.
That's probably what every creative person wants, whether it's music or film or TV. Because once the unfunny suits upstairs get involved, it turns into Two and a Half Men.
Exactly.
And it's not even, I mean, it's not even necessarily that the people giving notes are unfunny. It's just like the way that
their thought process is totally different. It's not not what is the funniest. It's what is going to resonate with the most amount of humans possible.
You're right. Yeah.
And not only that, but like, I mean, I've seen it on a smaller scale just in like writing workshops where you see someone's first draft and it's pretty good, and then they'll just get so many
chopped up by
many notes from people. And if you're not in the mindset of like if you just incorporate everything that people say, it becomes terrible. Like your thought process has to be like, well, what are they not getting? Like when they give you a note, you almost have to like psychologize the note that they're giving you. It's not like you don't do exactly what they say to make them happy. It's like, what is this note speaking to that I'm not that they're not getting about what I'm trying to make? Yeah. And so some people that weren't like they didn't understand that. Like we would read I'd read first drafts of people that were pretty good, and then they tried to incorporate everybody's suggestion, and then the second draft was fucking terrible.
You end up pleasing no one.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's just it's confusing and it doesn't have a personality anymore.
There's a term I learned in the first season of The Writing Room. It's called clay pigeoning too. So if you have something extremely graphic or funny that you want to keep in your script, you put something in there that's absolutely far more worse.
Right. That was like in Casino, the scene where they put the guy's head in the vise.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and his eyeball pops out, and they're like, we even put ice picks in his nuts. That part, Scorsese had in there because he figured it would get cut, and they'd be able to keep all the other stuff. And
it's true, yeah. It's like a creative tool that people use.
Yeah.
So we really want this scene. Let's put something a little bit worse, and hopefully the scene we really want will stay.
Yes. We used it a lot. And it's funny, in season one when I had a little bit more creative control in the show, I used, because I've had such a crazy life of drinking, partying, fun, crazy stories. So a lot of the stuff I put in my scripts are true stories. So I would just get text messages after season one was airing. Dude, you fucking stole my story. Like
I've been wanting to make that story into a TV show too.
My little brother and his friends would actually, when they were underage, would walk into a Long Struggs, take a can thing of like root beer, like cans, and a thing of beer, switch them out, and then just go pay for the root beer case with beers inside of it. And that was one of the
pretty genius. Actually,
it was genius for high school kids. And then
I did that with shoes a lot.
Well, I was Connor and I were talking before.
Wait, you put beer into shoe boxes?
No, or? I would get the box for like the $39 shoes, and then put like the $110 shoes.
Fuckers
inside
are like you are why I had to quit my shoe job.
You're the worst shoe salesman ever.
So it's funny because Connor and I were talking before before we went hot mics, and the funny part was I was having a conversation. And I hadn't seen Connor since he left San Francisco. I knew he was going to L.A. to work on some stuff. But I was talking to one of my friends, and we were discussing, like, hey, have you seen the show Workaholics? And we were talking about how a lot of the things that happened hit really close to home and reminded us of people we went to high school with. And there was, like, a distinctive kind of flavor of, like, you know, where the area where we went to high school. And it was funny. Then I found out like 2 weeks later that Connor had helped create it.
What is it about it that you thought was?
I think it's just like some of the characters, like just some like. It's hard to put your finger on. It's like kind of a je ne sais quoi, I don't know, Connor, can you help me out here?
Well, we did a lot of binge drinking when we were younger.
We did. There was it was a lot of drinking. And like I feel like, I mean, a lot of high school kids do, but I mean, it was like there was a lot of like drinking, a lot of vandalism. I think, you know, where we grew up is like pretty well off, so I think there was certainly a sense of like if we got in trouble, like we would, you know, like half the kids that we were with, their parents were lawyers, and they'd get us out, or like, whatever, you know? Like, there's probably something like that. I'm
my
really
fucking
sure,
friend's dad's a lawyer, yeah. Bro.
Lots of just vandalism and...
Which is weird, because I find that, I don't know, Marin kids don't seem like they have... there's a thing that I've noticed with Orange County kids, where, you know, growing up in Fresno County, you know, we always had this thing where if you... are too much of a dick, someone's probably going to stab you. I met a lot of Orange County kids when I was going to college in San Diego, and it seemed like they weren't used to they didn't have an idea of consequences. Like they would just get in fights and just do all sorts of crazy shit at parties and there was no, there wasn't that idea that someone might stab you if you started a fight with a bunch of random people.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't get that from Marin people for some reason.
It's
which it seems
pretty
like
mellow. I mean, we grew up drinking on hills and hooded sweatshirts and smoking weed.
I think the Bay Area is a little different vibe because I've lived in L.A. and in San Diego for school, and I grew up in the Bay Area. And I think the Bay Area is just a little more mellow overall. There's not there's not a lot of lifted trucks up here.
Yeah. Yeah. Orange County seems like it's 85% sociopath.
It's just a whole different vibe. It's like it's especially Orange County, even compared to L.A. L.A. is a whole bunch of transplants.
Yeah.
And then Orange County is like, I'm fucking from Orange County, bro. I'll fucking run you over with my lifted truck and my flat brim hat.
Sorry, I bit your ear off. This is what we do here.
Dude,
I think a lot of the party scenes were they rang kind of true. I think that was it. Where it was like. Just some crazy shit. Like, I still remember going to someone's house in San Rafael, where you grew up.
Yeah.
And, like, this guy's parents had been out of town for, like, 3 months. And he was just kind of like, he was almost like if you guys watch Eastbound and Down, a Stevie Janowski type character. And
no way
just,
anyone
like,
is
allowed,
like that in real life. Come on.
I mean, in that vein, though.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of allowed, like, all these kind of, like, these sort of guys who were like, they were cool guys, but they were kind of dickheads too, who like did not have any boundaries. And like, I still remember like we showed up and the guy's like, oh man. He was like laughing, like, oh man, my parents are going to be pissed. And like, we like go in the kitchen and someone had like taken the TV and thrown it out the window of the second story, like into the pool, you know, and it's like,
you know, what
man,
was a big thing too
trouble.
When we were that age was the CKY videos were just coming out.
That's
and that
true.
Was like, a big thing, like how far can you push yourself?
Yeah.
We were like 15, 16,
Plus
17.
Like mailbox vandalism.
Yeah, I mean that did not help the situation. Yeah.
We used to steal the metal chair at Taco Bell like every weekend. And we would steal the metal chair from Taco Bell and like tie it to a chain behind somebody's car and just like take it around and like take out somebody's mailbox.
Right,
with it.
Right.
I mean, of course, that's what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like a little like John Hughes-esque though. It was like it was pretty wholesome. Kids getting fucked up together. It was fun.
Yeah, we're not hurting people.
Yeah,
a couple of mailboxes might get hurt, but that's about it.
And the thing is, when you're that age, all you care about is making your friends laugh or having a story to tell the next morning when you're hungover. And
what do you mean when you're that age?
I mean, I can't just do that all the time now?
No, yeah, I think that's...
What motivation...
I feel like I've dedicated my life to that.
There's not a goddamn mailbox or P.O. box left on Van Ness after Vince went out of here.
One thing I really like about Workaholics is just the editing and even the intros and outros to commercials and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, how much were all you guys involved in that, or did you just have a really good editor, or was it something that just the team...
That's Kyle, the director. He has a really good eye, and he, you know, uses like the hip hop beats and does the kind of like photographic like stuff in and out. He's just really talented.
Well, and even I felt like it was the show has a lot of attention to detail.
Yeah,
even like shirt crossing. And,
yeah. Oh
and,
yeah. Yeah.
And everything in the office is just like you can tell it's You guys spent some time.
Hella gay, yeah. Well, actually, Kyle's...
liberal use of the word hella probably was also
you guys changed that sign fairly frequently, too, right?
We did.
Yeah.
Kyle's little brother actually does all of the set design and everything. So he... I mean, we had really good people on the show, so he... They just made it funny.
And good cast, too.
Yeah, Jillian came from Saturday Night Live. We almost didn't get her because she was writing for Saturday Night Live. Mary Beth, she's
the assistant.
The blonde girl.
Oh, she's really funny. Yeah. She's funny.
Very
funny.
I like
her a lot.
Montez, Eric Griffin is very funny. Mary Beth Monroe is very funny.
Is that the boss?
She's the boss, yeah.
She's really funny.
It was between her and Alana Ubeck. The girl from Hung, that's the neighbor in Hung.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
So that was like the last two choices.
So are you involved in the whole process, or is that more Comedy Central side?
No, I mean, they involved us in the whole casting process of who we chose and everything. And when you get to that level, I mean, you have, you know, 20 people, you know, weighing in on those decisions. So it's kind of overwhelming, but you say what you can when you think it's important, and then you hope for the best.
So where was it shot? Was it an actual house?
Yeah, this is a funny story. So we looked everywhere in pre-production for a house that matched the actual guy's house that they lived in. So when we shot our webisodes in the first pilot, we shot it at their house. We looked everywhere, and the guys were like, basically, hey, our house is perfect. We can get our rent paid. Our neighbors don't really care. Let's just shoot the rest of the show here. So they actually shoot the show at their house. It's in Van Nuys.
And all three of those guys live together?
I think two of them still do. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
At the start, they probably did.
Yeah, but it's funny because we would have to come. They'd be sleeping in their rooms, and then you'd have to go wake them up and then put them in their trailer to like, set up the lights and everything.
Guys, come on. We got to work.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's just things in that house, like empty beer cans and the stuff on the wall that didn't have to decorate it too much because it was
already there.
It was already there.
It made it even easier.
True story. My apartment in New York played the part of pedophile's apartment in an episode of Law & Order Criminal Intent. They came through my building. And they decided
they saw it because of you, right?
They decided, and they said, that guy, we need that. What's sir?
Very kid rapey.
They saw my apartment, and they're like, this looks like a pedophile's apartment.
And sir, which apartment are you?
I made like $4,000.
Oh, yeah.
Just for raping a kid?
They used our apartment for like a day.
It was great. Pretty great for that stuff. Yeah.
And then I always think a show involving office stuff, mm-hmm. especially when they don't get clearly serious about it.
Yeah.
One show I really like is a cartoon, Life and Times of Tim, on HBO. Don't know if you're familiar with that. But
I haven't seen it yet.
I skip
over it on demand all the time.
It's pretty good.
Get into it, man.
Okay, yeah. I will.
Especially any episode with The Boss.
Yeah.
Really funny. But same sort of thing where it involves work stuff, but clearly nothing to do with, you know, just like in Workaholics, they don't really do any work.
No.
Every once in a while they'll call someone and, you know, they'll get the kid to like try to steal his mom's credit card number and stuff like that. But anything else is just sort of the extra stuff.
It's funny, actually. Brendan and I have a mutual friend, and the telemarketer concept came from our friend, Mike.
Oh, Hurley. Yes, Mike. Yeah.
Is he a scumbag or is he nice?
No, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. He's very funny.
Doesn't live on a boat.
No.
Was he doing that?
He was doing telemarketing stuff. Okay. And then so we wrote that into the scripts. And then we found out that Adam, one of the main characters, used to sell Omaha steaks, like telemarketing.
Oh, nice.
That's where the whole concept with the Top Gun hat came from. Because if you made a certain amount of sales in a week, you got a Top Gun. So we just put it into the scripts. But then Adam had all of these crazy life experiences about being a telemarketer that he could just pull from.
Well, but I like that it's not a lot of them pretending to work. It's just them in the office environment.
Yeah, the office was like our Patty's Pub. You know, that was like our jumping spot for the story to kind of start everything. But you had kind of seen a lot of slacker comedies that were just based around a house and Knocked Up and all that stuff. So we wanted something that was more balanced.
Well, I think there's a lot of humor in corporate America if you make it really silly and sort of make it where people are trying to work. You know, you have the boss and you have Jillian, the sort of, you know, fake assistant, and you have Montez and everyone else like, don't fuck up my sales, man. And then
so many jobs are just so absurd. I mean, you guys had, you used to have like a corporate cheer that you did or something.
Oh, there's all sorts of silly stuff that I've been involved with. There's times when I went on an interview. This was way years and years ago. Showed up for an interview and I sat down. I was waiting for waiting to talk to whoever I was going to talk to. And in the other room, they're having a serious loud cheer. And this was for some job I didn't really want anyway. And I just went up to the secretary, whoever welcomed me in, because it was like, we're going to do awesome. Yeah! And I said, you know, this is not for me. And I just walked out before the interview. Like,
see ya.
Yeah, I can't do that. But that shit's real.
Yeah.
That shit's real.
No, there's so many jobs that they want you to... I was always of the mindset where I just want to go here and stay here for as little time as possible and go home and not think about it ever again. But... so many jobs, like, you, the idea was to go there and just stay there as long as possible doing nothing so you could prove that you left the latest that day, you know?
Don't forget about the meetings, Vince.
Oh, yeah, I'm putting out so many fires today.
I already told Vince I want to adapt his Masters of Unemployment video into a feature.
Oh, that was classic. That's
Brett,
old
Brett,
school.
Did you shoot that?
Yeah. Did that get you into college?
No.
Brett, did you shoot that?
I'm going to say it got you into college.
I mean, it did not get him.
Connor, where did you see that? I don't think I've seen that video since college.
I think I Googled him.
Is that still on YouTube
something.
Somewhere?
Yeah, it's on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah, it's probably it's got to be
vault.
On there somewhere.
Yeah. So
I don't even have like the password to the account that's under probably anymore.
Oh, that's so good. I forgot about that. Masters of Unemployment. That's a great video.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
just
when you play the drums?
To explain to the listeners, I made a video. I think I'm trying to remember what job I got fired from. I got fired from a lot of...
Just don't tell me that you got fired from holding the counter down at Starbucks. So you were good
at
that.
You know what I got fired?
Masters was up here.
No. It was in San Diego. All right. What happened was I worked at the website company, and then I worked for College Loan Corporation, and I got fired from that. And
you
then
didn't give out enough bogus loans.
The fucked up thing was, I went on vacation for like a week up in Sun Peaks in Canada. Like, I had a buddy, one of our Australian buddies, was working at a ski lift out there, and we went and I went and I'd spent like a week there just skiing for free, and it was like the best time ever for like a week. And I come back, and like the Monday that I come back, they fire me. And I was like, God damn it. Couldn't you fire me over the phone or something? Like, there's no reason for me to come back that Monday.
You know,
like,
early I woke up today.
I could have stayed in Canada, like, skiing for free for like another week. I mean, I probably would have been, you know, broke out, before too long, but it was pretty terrible.
Yeah, I don't need to come in.
So then I made this video about, you know, being unemployed, what I was doing, where I was, you know, playing saxophone and making my roommate's cat dizzy on the kitchen chair.
Is that where you were playing the bongo drums?
Yeah.
You had like a pitchfork or something in the backyard?
Yeah. I was raking leaves. Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to get down to the John Hughes. I don't write a lot of scripts anymore, but I'm trying to get down to the John Hughes. He said he could write a script in 4 days. So with that concept, I'd try to write that in 4 days. That's how much time I'd want
to... I'd be willing to dedicate this 4 days.
3 days longer, I think, anyone took on the original project. So. That's got to be at least three times the quality.
3.8 days longer.
From that era, there was also Mind Fish, which was Vince's, like...
Mind Trout.
Mind Trout, yes. Yeah. The avant-garde student film. I was doing the dishes the other night, and all of a sudden just popped into my head. And I've forgotten about Mind Trout.
The limited pool of actors that we had to draw from our film classes starts to show up when his girlfriend walks in. She's like, why are there pictures of Brett all over your walls?
Yeah. It's like, well, you know, I have my muse. I have my muses.
So, Connor, tell us sort of when you knew the show was doing well. I'm sure it's all about the numbers once it goes on the air.
I still don't even know how TV ratings work.
I don't actually either because does anyone know anyone that even knows anyone that has a Nielsen box?
It's a ridiculously small sample size. It's like 30,000.
Yeah. Does anyone know anyone who knows anyone who actually likes Big Bang Theory?
hand raised here because God damn it, that's funny. No, I don't watch any. I think all of those shows are straight from someone's butt.
Here's a bunch of nerds, hand quotes, that live inside of Mervyn's.
I keep getting confused that CBS is a network. And they're just like, yeah, we're the number one. I'm like, they're still doing that?
I tried to DVR The Celebrity Apprentice because Carolla was on it, and I didn't realize that
it's a 2-hour reality show. Like, who the fuck wants to watch 2 hours of a shitty reality show?
And then at the end, it's the Donald pretending like it's all important.
35 minutes of boardroom.
You gotta do something when you're strung out on like illegal Vicodin.
Ugh.
Well, I mean, it goes to show you that the brand name of Two and a Half Men was so strong, they wanted to keep that show. They could have called it anything, and it doesn't matter, but yeah. I want to watch Two and a Half Men again.
Well, this seems consistent enough. I'm going to continue doing this and getting drunk.
This still seems funny.
The basic truth is there's like 4 shows on network, and if you only have network, which apparently
there's only a lot need
of people,
one, you only need one, and it's the Honeymooners over and over again until the world ends.
It's actually shocking. Yeah, true. The amount of people that actually don't have DirecTV and or cable is high, higher than you and I would think, because a lot of the country likes to go to church.
I don't have cable. I don't go to church.
Do you read the Bible? Because there's some good stories in that.
I do, but it's ironic.
Yeah, but you are like, I don't have cable because I'm willing to search out my favorite shows on the internet
and steal them.
Yep. Yeah, that's probably half of our fan base is getting it off Pirate Bay and Graboid and everything.
But I thought Comedy Central was pretty good at showing things for free on Comedy Central. Is that just South Park?
I don't know what else Workaholics is on. If it's on Hulu and what other
First season off of
it's on Netflix.
Instant
Demand.
And
so there's DVDs
pay for
then.
Hulu.
Yeah,
there's DVDs.
Yeah, DVDs.
Do you know how well anything does?
There's DVDs. Really, I mean, there's really no back end in TV anymore. In film, there still is through those big wholesale distributors, but TV DVD sales. Like I haven't seen a check from DVD sales yet.
Those sons of bitches.
I'm a little confused why people don't go straight to Netflix. I mean, I get that the DVD sales from major studios have a hard time, like, with the fact that they could still make money off of it. But with TV shows and stuff, like, I pay for a Netflix on-demand subscription and will watch the shows that I want. And if I don't, I'll just, like, immediately go to the internet and they're there. I mean, with a lower sort of DVD sales possibility. It seems like
you're
why
talking
not
about it,
immediately release on Netflix on demand the moment the contract is over with the studio.
You're talking about an industry that is notoriously slow to change.
But I mean, this is TV too. It's not just film. I feel like TV is a little more nimble.
It's Netflix is trying to negotiate. I mean, the Netflix has to make separate deals with like every different network.
Every studio network has different.
I get why the major studios are still holding out because they think they can still like preserve their old world model.
Well, they've even told Netflix there's a certain one.
TV is a dying fucking breed. Like it's on its last gasps. I mean, it seems like they would want.
Brett, just because you don't have TV doesn't mean no one else watches it.
Yeah, I understand I'm in the gross minority, but I'm a little bit.
Well, I mean, I don't watch. Watch and DVR a lot of shows, but there's a lot of networks and there's a lot of shows out there.
It's sports. You
I watch a lot of
sports. Now.
I watch Workaholics and I watch a couple random MTV reality shows.
I pay $80 a month solely because I'm too lazy to do the thing where you find all your favorite shows on
you type it
in internet
one site.
Yeah. You know what I actually learned about
plug it into your TV. Oh, it's too much work for me.
This show and our fan base is like comedy is so aspirational. Like my friends in their late 20s don't really watch Workaholics, but when I meet my friends' little brothers or, you know, people's nephews, 16, 15, 17 year olds, they love the show. And so comedy is like you always want to watch people that are ahead of you in life.
What does that mean about me that I love the show?
It's not good, man. It's not good.
No, I think our biggest fan base is probably high school kids. And those are the ones that are probably still at home watching TV.
That's good. You don't want your fan base to be old because, the older they are, the sooner they're going to die.
That leads me to believe that the future of America has some sort of hope.
But at the same time, like, I mean, I'd be concerned that they're less interested. I feel like I want to be entrepreneurially philanthropic. Like, I want to pay you guys for having done that, and I want to see that continue. Like, I would pay probably movie prices per episode for that, given the chance. If I could be like, Workaholics, yes. Here's my vote. It's $8 a show. I would do that. I don't think the high school kids are sort of reared on that cusp.
Well,
where
the
just
advertising
like, why
in.
Isn't it fucking double free? Like, why aren't I getting paid to watch this as a consumer?
Yeah,
it's kind of funny that Taco Bell pays all of my bills. I don't know what else our biggest advertisers are.
Do they pay you in
Doritos tacos,
Dorito flavored tacos?
Yeah,
I think it's military, Taco Bell. and video games, I think, are the three biggest advertisers.
Well, yeah. You got a lot of Stone Kids
eating Taco Bell. You have three choices, motherfucker.
You got a lot of Stone Kids eating Taco Bell, playing video games.
Hey, bro, do you not have enough money for Taco Bell? Maybe you should join the military.
Yeah, it's a perfect circle.
No, no. Do you not have enough money for Taco Bell because you're stuck at home playing video games all day?
Yeah.
Maybe you should join the military.
And if you have neither... So you said you were creatively involved the whole way through the first season.
Yes.
Second season, what did something change? Did
yeah, I sold a big that kid script, an animated film, and you know, to tell you the truth, I didn't really like writing in a writer's room with like 10 other people. Some people love it, and when you really get into entertainment, you find out there's a lot of different types of writers. I am very disciplined about how much I write. I do it every day. And I just felt like I kind of wanted to make my own name. So I got the credit. I moved on. I'm locked financially. And
you get so many Taco Bell. Taco Bell. You don't even know what to do with all those Taco Bell shells.
Yeah. So I'm actually writing books now, because the only way you can sell big film projects is to write books and bring a fan base to the studio.
What were you? I mean, what was your background before that? Was that always something that you knew you wanted to do?
Was a bouncer. Or?
Yeah. No, my dad was a comedian up here in San Francisco. So I grew up around, you know, Robin Williams and you know, other Dana Carvey, all those other comedians that were up here. So you know, I had a certain amount of connections going down there. Not a lot, but and I knew it was funny. I'm not a very funny person, but
you,
I mean,
I mean, you grew up knowing that was something that you wanted to do, like pretty early on.
I knew like when I was 10 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, we were making like cops videos with like the VHS on the shoulder, like pretending like putting powdered sugar on our face, pretending we're doing coke. But I knew really young I wanted to make movies, write movies. But what's important when you get down there is picking a focus, because you meet so many of these actor douchebags. They're like, oh, I'm a writer, I'm a producer, I'm a director, I'm in real estate. And you end up doing that, you end up not being good.
You end
good
up doing nothing, right?
Nothing, yeah. So I picked my focus.
But part of the problem is there's a lot of untalented people
that
just want to be there and think that if I just hang out here long enough, there's something that's just going to fall on top of me and it's going to be great.
There is a gnarly party circuit there that I have like actress friends that have been on it. And they get on at like 21, 20, 22, going to parties, going to events, trying to meet producers. They end up doing a bunch of drugs.
Drinking. A bunch of dudes.
Yeah, doing a bunch of dudes. And then by the time they're like 25, they look like they're like 35. And
their vaginas look like they're 55.
But there's that way to make yourself, you know, known. And then...
Well, that's for women, that's a way to go. For dudes, it's not always the way to go.
It's weird. I mean, I've been to a limited number of like movie premiere events, but like every one that I've been to, there's been like there's a certain amount
of... It's almost like it's cast.
Girls that are there that aren't in the movie, but they got their boobies hiked up as high as they could possibly be.
Under their chin.
And they look like they're there to meet someone.
They basically have their hand in a hand job motion.
And yeah. I don't know who gave them the tip off or who told them how to get there.
Well, it's Vince. He sends it out.
Yeah.
Hey, Twitter, Skanks, I'm going to a movie premiere. Please show up.
I'm convinced that there is just this old Jewish billionaire in Beverly Hills. And when a girl gets there at 19, she just gets like signed a lease to an apartment and given a Mercedes and like a stipend to live.
You must go meet Chaim Levine.
I don't know how these girls are driving that nice of cars and surviving.
Well,
and not
because
working.
There's a lot of people with money. Yeah. I mean, you see it on all sorts of reality shows where there are dudes with money that don't mind banging some young girls and just paying them a couple bucks.
I have a funny story. One of the first times I tried to go out to like a nice Hollywood, because I lived on Hollywood and Vine, which is like transvestites and Scientology
and
clubs
and heroin. Yeah.
It's actually cleaned up, because what happens in LA is the gays move in, fix it up, and then move out, and the hipsters move in. So it's actually really nice now.
Well, so a lot of scarves.
Yeah.
Vince, watch out, buddy. Vince hates scarves.
I tried.
Well, they hate me.
I tried to go out to this club, and they made me wait in line, and there was seriously...
What's the name of it? Because I always love the names.
So, okay, what they do, though, is they close them down. Like, they'll be really, like, big for 6 months, and then the crowd will get more ghetto, and then there'll be a fight or something. They'll close it down, renovate it, and put a new name up, but it's always the same owner.
It's genius.
Yeah, I think it was a place where Suge Knight got hit with a pipe. I can't remember the name.
The first or the second time? Because it happened in the same place.
Oh, it's called the lead pipe.
It's like sugar or something. It's right. It's right there.
Sugar night.
Yeah.
Sugar night.
No, it's. Anyway. So, anyways, I'm in line, and there's like six other people in line, and I'm trying to meet a girlfriend inside that I only had a few friends down there. And Bud Bundy pulls up, and I swear to God, with like six of the douchiest looking people I've ever seen, shakes hands with the bouncer.
Was Danny Masterson there?
Oh no, he's a big. Isn't he a big Scientologist?
Yeah, he is. Yes.
Yeah, no, he. I don't think he drinks. Right? They're not allowed to drink.
I don't know.
He DJs.
He kills. Oh God, yeah, yeah. He's got a DJ.
Wheels of steel, Vince. The wheels of fucking steel.
Sorry. Continue.
So Bud Bundy walks up, shakes hands with the bouncers, just lets six of these like cretins in,
and they live on fucking sailboats.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there for another 20 minutes trying to get in, and I'm like, you know what, fuck this.
You letting Screech in?
That was my first thought. You letting fucking Screech in?
Fucking really? Fucking Screech?
I'm never gonna go to one of these clubs ever again. I think
that was I forget who I was talking about this with, but I want to make a movie about my lifelong goal to punch Screech in his face. I really.
How does it end with you punching him?
I hope so. I mean, that would be a happy ending.
I thought you were right.
It sounds like a docudrama.
Yeah, yeah. It's
it sounds like a docudramedy.
Yeah, it's sort of like Roger and Me. Like it's
Sockumentary.
A sockumentary. Yeah, there you go.
A rock of sockumentary. Is that too much?
No, it's too much. You ruined it.
That's a really good question. I don't know who I would punch.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So, all right. If we're
I think we know.
Let's make lists. All right, we're making lists of our top. Top three or four people that we would punch. All right, my top three I think are Screech, Ted Nugent, and Gene Simmons.
Wow, you've been thinking about this for a long time.
I really want to.
I feel like you have a top 50.
I really, really want to punch Ted Nugent right in his stupid fucking soul patch, and I always have. I hate him.
Oh, just like squarely in the soul patch?
Oh, God, I hate him so much.
Do you want to shave his soul patch?
They always have commercials for the Ted Nugent concerts on HDNet, and the, you know, HDNet has all the MMA shit that I watch.
What?
And so I'm always
full disclosure, Vince only watches MMA and cooking shows.
I only watch competitive fighting and or cooking, and
so true.
And I see a lot of Ted Nugent's stupid face in all my commercials. So that's my top three. Anyone?
I don't know. Not. I mean,
I would go. I think I'm like too like emotional, like I'll really fixate on someone and they really like bother me for a long time and then I like forget. Like I just remember for so long I just wanted to punch Tyler Florence in the face so much. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but I just wanted to punch
him.
No,
he deserves a punch.
He's got a very punchable face. And then like, but right now it's like number one with a bullet is Rick Santorum. Like I just just pound him into a
bullet. That one's too easy. But
Did you hear the thing about him telling the Puerto Rico that if they just make English the official language that they'll be get statehood?
I'm surprised.
Anywho, I count on your vote.
Yeah.
Fucking idiot.
So they're a state, right?
Yeah.
I think they're a state.
Well, anyway, guys, they will be as soon as they decide to speak English.
Yeah.
And pray to Jesus every day.
Well, they already do that.
Yeah. Oh,
except they pray to Jesus.
Well, they pray to the Virgin Mary.
Oh, sure.
She lives in a candle.
Because I was thinking Santorum, but that's a very short term. You know, because he's going to be out of the spotlight hopefully soon. Otherwise, I'm going to need to move out of the country. But there's people like that. There's like, you know, the Donald Trumps of the world could probably use a big punch in the face.
Oh, his son. I would punch his son in the face.
Or what about both of them?
Oh, he's got that. He's got a very punchable face.
His son for sure.
What about Colin Hanks? He's punchable. He's pretty punchable.
Yeah. He creeps. I don't know. He creeps me out more than
he
makes
a good noise when you punch him, too. He's probably like
a squeaky toy on its last squeak.
Yeah. But there's enough of that impact where it's kind of like. You're like.
I don't know. For me, like Colin Hanks is not one of those guys that makes me want to punch him. He's him and Daniel Radcliffe, they both have this thing where I just want to back away slowly and like. They have that lurky weirdo quality to them where it's like, oh, that's the lurky weirdo. He's going to come talk to you and then chase everyone out of the room.
He was good in Dexter this last season.
Oh, I stopped watching. Yeah, I actually
he was good.
I watched the first season. I loved it.
Was he playing
the
lurky
weirdo?
The second
season was terrible.
Exactly.
There you go.
And I got halfway through the third and I was like, I can't do this anymore.
The Jimmy Smith season?
Yeah.
Backed out?
Yeah, I bailed. The first season was brilliant. I thought the first season was amazing.
Yeah.
I always thought that show was a little too up its own ass for my taste, but yeah.
Well, that's, you know, I thought the first season was not up its own ass. it was, I concur with you on the rest.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the first season was better. But, yeah. News break. You guys want to do it? You guys want to do it?
Yeah, let's get a little, right. Let's squeeze a little.
So remember the guy who, the German guy who poops at parties? The what? Linda poops at parties?
The party pooper?
That's weird because sometimes I poop at parties. Yeah, does so that make me a party pooper?
We got a little more information on this guy. It turns out he's a guy, a German DJ who calls himself DJ Flula Borg.
DJ Party Pooper.
And he just did a video for Screen Junkies. He went to a junket, which I thought was a clever idea. And instead of asking questions, he's just like, can you make a sound? And they all made a sound, and he like made a remix song with the sounds that people
made.
That's
kind of clever.
That was pretty good.
And, you mean he didn't just do what everyone else does? Like, tell me about some movie.
Yeah. Please psychologize your character that you didn't write. Tell us all about his hopes and dreams, his aspirations. And then I found this other older video of him on a current TV show where, like in LA, I guess they have these guys that drive around moped. Like you can call a guy on a moped and he comes and he puts his moped in your car and drives you home with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never used
that. They had that in San Diego, except it was just two people that would drive around and then one guy would get in your car and the other guy would follow him.
Yeah. One of me and Joe's friends is a comedian, used to do that, and I guess I want to say it was the guy.
He got murdered.
He crashed. He crashed someone's car. Like it was some guy in Lincoln Park or something, and he got fired because he like.
So it turns out you're not supposed to crash the car when you're the safe driver. Weird. Yeah. That's a weird rule.
So anyway,
sticklers over there.
Yeah. The current TV show about these guys. They pick one of the guys they picked up happened to be this DJ Lula Borg, and so I got a sound clip.
I'm a German DJ. I've come to Los Angeles to be a music man, to make people dance around. Lawrence, are you from Arabia? Lawrence of Arabia, British Beatlemania, Ole Miss, John Glenn, Liston, Beats, Patterson. Lawrence, do you want to hear my music?
I will now in your car.
Right now. You go round and round. You need to drive around, Lawrence. It is a good song. Watch out, here comes crazy time. Honk the horn. Public transportation, it is like a small baby here. You know, like it doesn't know what to do. It is like with diapers and pooping everywhere. Germany, in Deutschland, it is better. It is like an adult. It is like Greg Louganis. It knows what to do. It is dancing on the diving board. No, it's a mistake.
It's like Greg Louganis. It's dancing on a diving board.
So he's an American comedian that's just playing this character.
All right. So we got. I looked all over the web about this guy because you know the German accent seemed a little thick. It seemed like too much. You know, if you've met German people, they tend not to be that over the top with their Germanness. So. Someone sent us an email, and
from Germany.
No, it says something about I'm a huge fan of the Frogcast, blah blah blah. Now onto the serious business. The German DJ known as Flula Borg, funny as he may be, is not really German. Well, let's just say his Germanness is not as severe as he leads on. But if you've ever met a German person, you'd know that none of them talk like that. While yes, Flula was born in Germany. He moved to the States when he was a little kid and speaks without an accent in his daily life. Christoph, as he's known, was a part-time German teacher at my high school in L.A. before the whole Flula thing took off. I feel a little bad outing him like this, but every time I see you post his videos, I feel compelled to say something. Use this information at your discretion and keep up the great work.
You know what that reminds me of? So in NFL Europe, we got in this huge fight outside a Turkish bar. Have I told this story on the broadcast?
I've heard it, but not on the podcast.
Huge fight outside a Turkish bar. Like, multiple guys ended up getting sent home. Like, a guy got a skull fracture with a baseball bat. These dudes came out of the bar with, like, samurai swords. It was, like, the scariest shit I've ever seen.
Did they have those on them?
Yeah, well, it was like we...
So how happens you go to a samurai bar?
We were trying to get in, and...
Samurai baseball? Dude, you guys want to get some drinks at samurai baseball?
And one of the guys we were with was just like a freaking hothead. I saw him in the paper like 3 years later, like choking his pregnant wife. I was like, I'm not really surprised. Anyway, just like socks the bouncer. And I mean, it was seriously just like, ah, la, la, la. Like a million dudes ran out with like just ghetto like chains and like just weird weapons, you know, and like samurai swords and shit. And so like I'm just like, I'm trying to clear everybody out of there. A guy got hit with a bat. A dude got like his chin like sliced. Oh. Like it like took a huge like chunk
with,
out of
with
his chin.
The samurai
with
sword?
The samurai sword. And he was like a corner. And he's like, yeah, man. Like I looked right when I turned, the guy swiped it at me and I ducked. And like the way he put it, I mean, this guy was like a corner. He's got good reflexes. Like he would have gotten like decapitated if it had been like a center, you know. Anyway, so
or a left tackle,
so, or left. Well, I don't know. I was pretty good from the ankles down.
No, from the head up, he's a genius.
Yeah. Head up.
Yeah. So anyway,
they took off the best part of him. So the only NFL worthy part they cut off.
It's fuckers. Yeah. So like the next day, we have to like go to practice. We get on the bus because the practice facility was like half an hour from the hotel we stayed at, and the GM comes on, who's this German guy, which what the fuck? Why is your top personnel guy German? He doesn't know fuck about football. But he comes on, and he's got the newspaper, and it's like on the front page of the paper. There's a picture of a samurai sword. And I knew one word, and it was like schlock, or it was like schlockturn and like disco. And I knew that schlockturn meant like fight because our rivalry game was called Die Mutter aller Schlachten, which is like the mother of all battles. So I'm like, well, that's not good. And he's got this paper with schlockturn and disco and a samurai sword. And I'm like, fuck. And he goes, everybody shut up! And he's like yelling at all of us. He's like, do you see this paper? It says, you're acting like you're in the Bronx. This is not the Bronx. This is Germany. Do you act like this when you're in the Bronx? What then act like it when you're in the Bronx? Don't act like it when it's in Germany. You go home to the Bronx soon. And then it's like quiet for a second, and some guy in the background's like, hey, man, what the fuck that supposed to mean? And he's like, oh, shit. And he got scared, like ran off the bus.
I did not mean that. I have to leave.
Didn't you guys also beat up the LA Kings at some point?
That was in college. We got in a fight in Newport Beach with some guys from the LA Kings. And we wouldn't have known it, but they were trying to get out of it when we all got like detained by the police. And what was cool was like we didn't start it. They actually like one of my best friends, Sean, was kind of minding his own business, and it was New Year's. He was like hammered, and the Kings had gotten kicked out of this bar, and one of them just sucker punched Sean. Which I don't know why you sucker punch a 6'5", like 320-pound.
For some reason, drunk people seem to want to fight the big guys.
Yeah.
It's true. You get challenged a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so then like we ended up getting this big fight, and so then the cops are detaining us. We're like, great, we're like fucked. And the bouncers of the bar actually came out. They're like, we had to kick these guys out. These guys are minding their own business, so the cops actually let us go. But I do remember one of them was crying, and so we're sitting there against a wall with our hands behind our backs, and I was like, oh, wow, this guy's crying. Oh, my God. I'm like yelling at all my friends. Like, look at this fucking guy's crying. Sorry. That was a tangent.
No, that's
a good tangent. Yeah,
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So do you guys have any good bouncing stories? So
anyway, the famous line, and when we get together, we still say this line, is it was this, I won't throw him under the bus. As far as I can tell, I think he's still in the NHL, but he was just bleeding. He's got like a cut over his eye. And his nose is bleeding, and he's swelling up, and he's going, don't you know who I am? I play hockey for LA Kings. So we still say that.
Did that work?
No, it didn't work. The guy, the cop took out his like Nancy Kerrigan baton. He's like, he's like, you want to sit down now? Or like something like that. It was pretty awesome.
Do you feel like sitting now?
I was sitting, yeah. Yes, this guy was not.
Do you guys ever have to bounce anyone together? Collective,
I think a few times, yeah.
The double bounce,
you gave someone the actual heave ho one time.
I did. There was a girl who
physical
like,
heave ho.
She was just out of her mind on like blow or something,
the heel and the neck. Yeah.
Yes, and
the
so heel and the neck, yeah.
Oh, you was, both know the same
she,
story.
She had barricaded
this went
herself.
The bouncer rounds.
She had barricaded herself in like the big toilet stall,
throwing up.
Yeah, and
the owner
who's like a big guy. He's not a small dude. Goes into the women's bathroom, and he's like looking in the crack in the stall.
And then he starts pouring water on her.
But she like had the heels like ready to pounce. And so finally he just like, I don't remember what he did. I think he just might kick the door open or whatever.
There was two other girls in there, and they were yelling at him, and the bouncer started, or the owner of the bar started throwing water on all of them. They opened the door, and the drunk girl came out with a heel, swung, and hit him in the neck, and like went into his neck and drew blood. He picked her up by the hair and the back of the dress.
Yeah.
Carried her up the back of the stairs.
And he came out of the bathroom because we were like, well, we're not going in there. Right, he came out of the bathroom, and he's like, get this fucking, he's from New York, get this fucking bitch out of here. And so I grabbed her, and my friend grabbed her, and she was like, okay. But she wasn't like walking. And so we just had her like kind of under the armpits, like carrying her out. And then she just leans over and starts biting my arm. It was like a downstairs thing. God, so I ran her up the stairs and just like shoved her out the door.
And then her brother and her boyfriend and his friends were, she landed seriously at their feet on the concrete.
She hit the pavement and slid. She went and just slid across the concrete. And it wasn't, you know, it was just like, I was getting bit. So I was like, fuck this, you know. And like, I, you know, it wasn't like some weird thing. I was just like, okay, I'm getting rid of this girl. And so I shoved her out the door, and and then I got hit with a blackjack that night,
and then a huge fight erupted.
Yeah, it was like a fake, because the cops came later and showed us like all the weapons they had confiscated, and it was like a piece of surgical tubing that was tied at both ends, and there was like ball bearings and sand in it. It was like a homemade blackjack. Wow.
My favorite part of all altercations is the fucking ridiculous homemade weapons. Our buddy got thrown through a glass table in San Diego from some fucking townies, and we go outside, and our buddy, I think we're calling him Johnny on the podcast, like opens up his truck. He's like, no, I got this covered. He's got like a bike chain with like spikes stuck in it, and like a bat with a single nail, and it's just like, I just keep this shit on me because, you know, I get in fights.
Never know.
Yeah. Better he's got enough for all of us. It's like a fucking, it's like a hoodlum grab bag.
Which one do you want?
You're like, some guy just got like a can of tomato sauce. Just like, what the fuck am I going to do
with nails in it? Yeah. With nails.
No, the knuckle rolls. It was basically like a roll of quarters. Like, so it's like a big heavy thing that you put in your fist. It makes the punching a lot harder.
It's an expensive tool, actually. It's a $20 tool.
I don't know why you need to carry it in your trunk. I'm just saying.
It was not a club in the nicest part of town, but we didn't. I mean, I'd say that's probably like the craziest thing we had to do. I mean, a lot of it was just, you know, kicking out drunk people. And,
yeah. That was a big fight. And then when you're sober and you're fighting drunk guys, it's like hitting the whack-a-moles. They're just like completely still, and you're just like, really? Do you want me to do this?
I think it's like the closest I'll ever get to like a zombie movie, because we were like in the door, and there was like a big group of us, and I was just like throwing punches, like trying to like just like cause enough room to like save people. I will never forget, my old roommate Justin jump on the hood of a car and do like a flying kick. I don't know if you remember that. And then, like, finally we're trying to, like, close the door, and it's just this, like, sea of arms. Just like, rah, 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 rah. Like,
yeah, it was a zombie movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was Justin, then the guy complimented him on some wrestling move he did.
That was a different time. That was when I was doing construction. And this guy that Justin that Connor and I bounced with was also my roommate at the time. He and I later did construction together, and we were walking down the street in San Francisco, and it was so funny. We were, you know, right by a bank, and all of a sudden, out of the bank comes a cop crawling on all fours. Or no, the guy was on all fours. Sorry. The cop was on his back with a chokehold, but, like, the guy was taking the cop for a ride. Like, this is you could tell the guy was, like, a druggie in the serious, like, throes of, like, withdrawal and, like, psychosis. So this cop, you could tell, he was, like, hanging on for dear life. And this guy's like, no! Like, freaking out. I think we found out later he, like, tried to pass a bad check. So the cops came.
When you pass a bad check on PCP, you're ready to run.
Right. So
you just write Satan in red marker. Can I please have twice what this is written for?
So, like, this cop's clearly having trouble, but he's not, like, going to, like, yell for help. But you can tell he's kind of like, oh, shit. So this guy's going like, no, I didn't do anything. Oh, like, yelling. And so then Justin's like, we got to do something, man. And so he runs over, and he, like, grabs this guy's arm and puts him in this, like, wrist lock. And the guy's like, I didn't even do it. Oh, nice move, bro. And then, I have real pain.
I love the, oh, nice move, bro.
I swear to God. I'm sure there's probably some listeners out there who's like, that didn't really happen. Like, I saw it. It was insane. I wouldn't believe it unless I saw it.
In his bank robbing PCP haze, he had a moment of clarity.
Yeah. Oh, nice wrist lock. Ah! Satan's taking my eyes!
Yeah. I mean, Justin was like a wrestler in high school. He's not a big guy, but like he's pretty
handy. He knows his wrist
locks.
And
then the best part is he's like, I hope he doesn't take down my name. I got a warrant out. By the way, it was a warrant out for a dine and dash at Denny's in like 1997. And it's like still like preventing him from holding government jobs, he claims. I don't know.
He can never go back to Lakeside. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All those government jobs that he applied for.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
He worked government jobs. He worked at the dump for a while, didn't he?
I think that was private. I don't think it was a
not the public dump.
Yeah. It was a privately owned dump. All right.
Well, Connor, I mean, so no more workaholics. You just you get some checks.
What's next for Connor Pritchard?
Yeah.
I'm publishing a book in September.
All right.
My first novel.
Is that can people pre-order or anything?
Not yet. I mean, I'm still going through
pre-order.
Yeah, I'm self-publishing through Amazon, so it will be up probably in August. But
any sort of Twitters or anything, or people
I'm actually starting a publishing company up here to kind of publish that book.
This is your chance for millions of listeners to hear what
everyone at Comedy Central.
And then I'm also shooting another TV pilot based on a board game called Things. And if you haven't played Things, you should go out and buy it. It is the best game ever made.
Wow, that is a pretty big endorsement.
You can buy it at Toys R Us, and I just got the rights to it. And I'm shooting a pilot, and Vince is going to come out.
What?
Yep, June 10th.
Well, it's not getting picked up now.
Yeah, I know.
This guy's a curse.
Bad at
I just gave her the tongue kiss of death.
Is this the thing you wanted me to come to?
Yes.
Where is it?
It's going to be in Marin, June 10th. All right. I have 30 comedians, bloggers, celebrities, writers.
Which one is Vince? Out.
He's a blogger comedian. He's a slash.
All three, bro. What are you talking about? How dare you?
He's a blogger.
I won the Slashy Awards at the annual blogger convention.
He's the Cordell Stewart.
Which is just him and his slacks.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Sitting
yeah.
around with
it's
their
me
shirt
and my,
on.
My stuffed animals.
You win the award again, buddy. High five.
And he tries to do it, but there's no one. You know.
I fell through the coffee table, yeah. But.
So what? That's crazy. Is this one for a specific network?
No, what we're going to do is go pitch it at Funny or Die, probably, because it's a great platform for comedians to promote themselves. And so we'll go pitch it at Funny or Die, because anyone that would want to be on that show is on Funny or Die making stuff. And then probably do 6 webisodes on Funny or Die and then go pitch it to the networks. But I guarantee you,
the network's
saying
like,
it right here, I will sell that show. It's
wow.
really good.
The meme that Vince and I did ended up on the front page of Funny or Die.
That's true. That's true.
Really?
The Emilio Estevez meme where he's like not as hardcore as Charlie Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That was when, I don't know if you remember this, Charlie Sheen was relevant for about 15 minutes.
What were our Emilio Estevez
captions? The really good ones were, it was, what was he talking about?
Oh, like, I'm healing at a rate that is normal for a man my age.
Yeah, then there was also, I'm on a drug, it's called Lipitor, ask your doctor.
Yeah.
I'm a 747, bro, I deploy my wheels before I land.
Yeah, that's right. But it turns out Emilio Estevez is a lot gnarlier than we gave him credit for. But
yeah, I also got on the front page when Paulie published the conversation between me and Justin Halpern about Glenn Danzig and the bricks in front of his house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's good times.
Yeah, if you guys got more Danzig brick stories, send them.
So
we accept anything and everything Danzig related.
Yes. For this shoot, so
we're
Brendan,
big Misfits fans.
Brendan fits into the celebrity, Vince fits into the blogger.
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You're filling them out.
All right.
Yep. Nice.
I'm not a retired NFL superstar.
NFL Europe has already retired his number. What number were you?
Nine!
I was 77, then I was 72, then I was 79.
You didn't have a lot of choices.
No, they were given to me.
It's 70.
This is your number. You have it. This is yours.
This is was not in Compton's anymore.
I don't get it, you guys. It's your numbers.
We tattoo it on your forearm so you don't forget.
Well, that was the easy joke, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, sorry.
Also, I got spotted at the gym. It was kind of awkward. I was like in the middle of a set of military press, and this guy comes up. He's like, "Hey, Brendan from the Frogcast, right?" And I was like,
"Really?
Yeah." And I was like, "Yeah. How'd you know it was me?" He's like, "Oh, I could just tell. He's like, big guy." I was like, okay, that's sort of weird.
And also, I've been watching you for about three blocks.
I immediately felt this intense pressure to say something funny, which I didn't.
You should have farted right in his mouth.
Yeah, I know. I should have just like yelled, suck my dick, you know? But like, I was just like, okay, cool. Hey, thanks for listening. I'm glad. And then he like starts walking away, and I'm like, you from around here? He like does the turnaround, and he's walking backwards. He's like, I'm from San Diego, but I just moved here. I was like, cool, where do you live? He's like, here. And then, like, walk. I was like, man, that was just
I got to go, Brendan.
Awkward, yeah.
I got to go.
Brendan, from the broadcast. Oh,
listen
really
to you, but I don't like seeing you in person.
Was so I have one weights. Fan that officially alienated him.
So if he knew you, why did you feel pressure to say something funny?
I guess that's just always kind of what I, like, I don't know. I think it was just this immediate, like, I know you as the guy on the comedy podcast, therefore I expect you to say something funny.
Are we a comedy podcast? Has that been going on the whole time?
Yeah, the funniest one available.
What?
Yeah.
It's true.
Mm. By far.
By far is a fact, too. Mm.
All right, sorry. Should we wrap this up?
Yeah, let's do it.
So thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Yeah, and good luck with all the projects. Sound like pretty busy. I hope those checks keep coming in the mail.
Hopefully.
I'll keep watching. I don't have a Nielsen box.
Season 5 is the big one because then you can get into syndication.
Ooh, is that – that's right.
That's why there's always the 100th episode spectacular because everyone's partying because they're going to make a lot of money now.
Everyone jerks off on each other and money comes out.
That's the strip club night for sure.
Yes. Yeah. You guys are all invited.
You sell that to China. You sell that to Afghanistan. They love TV over there.
Yeah, I want to see exporting workaholics where you travel to Russia like Phil Rosenthal.
Yeah, that. Who cares, though? Europe, it's Phil Sell in Germany. It's funny. These American guys are kind of funny.
They don't seem organized enough. This doesn't seem... This would not translate.
I know why they call them workaholics. They work 40 hours a week. It's just stupid.
That is crazy.
All right. Connor, thanks for coming on, man. It's good to see you again.
Thank you.
It's been a long time. All right. So, in the meantime, fraudcast@gmail.com. Vince, what's the Google Voice number for voicemails?
First of all, I just want to say Ice House tomorrow night, Thursday, Bar Lubitsch Friday night, and Hollywood Improv Saturday.
Big
so there
show
you go.
For Vince.
Yeah, big shows.
In the meantime, if people want to leave you voicemails of support, where do they leave
them? 415-275-0030. We got a few good voicemails this week. We didn't get to them. I apologize, but it happens.
All right. So until next week, good night and good chins.